He had a lesion, a scar in the brain that was caused by some childhood disease. In the case of your daughter, the scar, if she has one, would be forward, up front, in the temporal lobe. And when it's hit by a particular electrical impulse of a certain wavelength and periodicity, it triggers a burst of abnormal reactions from deep within a focus in the lobe. Do you see? I'll take your word. But I'll tell you the truth, Doc. I don't understand how her whole personality could have changed. In the temporal lobe, that's extremely common and can last for days or even weeks. It isn't rare to find destructive, even criminal behavior. There's such a big change, in fact, that 200 or 300 years ago, people with temporal lobe disorders were often considered to be possessed by a devil. They were what? Taken over by a demon, you know, something like a superstitious version of split personality. Closing her eyes, Gliss lowered her forehead onto a fist. "Listen, tell me something good," she huskily murmured. "Well, now, don't be alarmed. If it is a lesion, in a way, she's lucky. Then all we'd have to do is remove the scar." "Oh, swell. Or it could be just pressure on the brain. Listen, I'd like to have some x-rays taken of her skull. There's a radiologist here in the building, and maybe I can get him to take you right away. May I call him?" "Shit, yes, go ahead. Let's do it. Do whatever you have to." Klein called and set it up. They would take her immediately, they told him. He hung up the phone and began writing a prescription. "Room 21 on the second floor," he said. "Then I'll probably call you tomorrow or Thursday. I'd like a neurologist in on this. In the meantime, I'm taking her off the Ritalin. Let's try her on Librium for a while." He ripped the prescription sheet from the pad and handed it over. "I'd like to stay close to her, Mrs. McNeil. In these walking trance states, if that's what it is, it's always possible for her to hurt herself. Is your bedroom close to hers?" Yeah, it is." "Oh, that's fine. Ground floor?" "No, second floor." "Big windows in her bedroom?" "Well, one. What's the deal?" "Well, I tried to keep it closed. You might even have them put a lock on it, maybe. In a trance state, she might fall through it. I once had a..." "Patient," Chris finished with the trace of a wry, weary smile. Klein grinned. "I guess I do have a lot of them, don't I?" "Yeah, a couple." Chris propped her face on her hand and leaned pensively forward. "You know, I thought of something else just now."
"And what was that?"
"Well, like after a fit, you were saying that she'd fall right away dead asleep. Like on Saturday night. I mean, didn't you say that?" "Well, yes," Klein nodded. "Yeah, I did." "Well then, how come those other times when she said that her bed was shaking, she was always wide awake?"
"Well, you didn't tell me that."
"Well, that's how it was. She looked fine. She'd just come to my room and then asked to get into bed with me."
Any bedwetting, vomiting?"
Chris shook her head. "No, she was fine."
Klein frowned and gently chewed on his lip.
Well, let's look at those x-rays," he finally told her. Feeling drained and numb, Chris shepherded Reagan to the radiologist, stayed at her side while the x-rays were taken, took her home. She'd been strangely mute since the second injection, and Chris made an effort now to engage her.
You want to play Monopoly or something, sweetheart?"
Slightly shaking her head, Reagan stared at her mother with unfocused eyes that seemed to be retracted into infinite remoteness. "I'm feeling real sleepy," she said. The voice belonged to the eyes. Then, turning, she climbed up the stairs to her bedroom. Worriedly watching her, "Must be the Librium," Chris reflected. Then at last she sighed and went into the kitchen. She poured coffee, sat down at the breakfast nook table with Sharon.
How'd it go? Sharon asked her.
Oh, Christ. Chris fluttered the prescription slip onto the table. Better call and get that filled, she said, and then explained what the doctor had told her. If I'm busy or out, keep a real good eye on her, would you, Cher? Klein told me that... Dawning. Sudden. Oh, that reminds me.
Chris got up from the table and went up to Reagan's bedroom, where she found her asleep underneath her bed covers. Chris moved to the window, tightened the latch, and then stared down below. Facing out from the side of the house, the window directly overlooked the precipitous public staircase that plunged down to M Street, far below.
Oh, boy. Better call a locksmith right away.
Chris returned to the kitchen and added the chore to the list from which Karen sat working, gave Willie the dinner menu, returned a call from her agent concerning the film she'd been asked to direct.
Well, so what about the script? The agent wanted to know.
Yeah, it's great, Ed. Come on, let's do it. When does it go?
Oh, well, your segment's in July, so you're going to have to start preparing right away.
You mean now?
Yeah, I mean now. This isn't acting, Chris. You're involved in a lot of the pre-production. Got to work with the set designer, the costume designer, the makeup artist, the producer. And you'll have to pick a cameraman and a cutter and block out your shots. Come on, Chris, you know the drill.
Oh, shit, Chris breathed out disconsolately.
You got a problem?
Yes, I do, Ed. It's Reagan. She's very, very sick.
Hey, I'm sorry, kid.
Sure.
Chris, what is it?
They don't know yet, Ed. I'm waiting for some tests.
Listen, Ed, I can't leave her.
So who says to leave her?
No.
You don't understand, Ed. I need to be at home with her. She needs my attention.
Look, I just can't explain it, Ed. It's too complicated. So why don't we hold off for a while?
No, honey, we can't. They want to try for the music hall over Christmas, Chris. And I think that they're pushing that now.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, Ed. They can wait 2 weeks? Now, come on.
Listen, you bugged me that you wanted to direct. And now all of...
Yes, yes, I know I wanted Ed. Ed, I really, really want it bad. But...
Ed, I'm sorry. I'll just have to tell him I need some more time. Okay? And when I do, we're going to blow it. Now, that's my opinion.
Chris, listen. They don't want you anyway. That's not news. They're just doing this for more. You know that. And I think if they go back to him now and say she isn't too sure she wants to do it yet, he'll have an out.
Look, you do what you want. I don't care. There's no money in this thing unless it hits.
But if you want it, I'm telling you. I ask for a delay, and we blow it.
Now then, what should I tell them?
Chris sighed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know, Chris. It's not easy.
No, it isn't, Ed.
Okay, listen. Maybe if... Chris thought.
Then she shook her head.
Oh, never mind, Ed. They'll just have to wait, she said. Can't be helped.
Your decision.
Yep.
Let me know what they say.
Of course. Meantime, Chris, I'm really sorry about your daughter.
Thanks, Ed. Take care.
You too.
Chris hung up the phone in a state of depression, lit up a cigarette, then mentioned to Sharon,
I talked to Howard, by the way, did I tell you?
Oh, yeah? When?
Did you tell him about Reagan?
Yeah, I told him you ought to come see her.
And is he? Is he coming?
I don't know.
I really don't think so.
You'd think he'd make an effort.
Yeah, I know.
Chris sighed.
Do you know, Cher, you've got to understand his hang-up.
What do you mean?
Oh, the whole Mr. Chris McNeil thing. Rags was a part of it. She was in, and he was out. Always me and Rags together on the magazine covers. Me and Rags in the layouts. Mother and daughter, pixie twins.
Chris moodily tapped ash from his cigarette with a finger.
Ah, nuts, who knows? It's all mixed up, it's a mess. But it's hard to get hacked with them, Cher.
I just can't. She reached out for a book by Sharon's elbow.
So it's this. What are you reading?
Oh, I forgot. It's for you. Mrs. Perrin dropped it by.
She was here?
Yeah, this morning. Said she's sorry she missed you and she's going out of town, but she'll call you as soon as she's back.
Chris nodded and glanced at the title of the book. A Study of Devil Worship and Related Occult Phenomena.
She opened it and found a penned note.
Dear Chris, I happened by the Georgetown University Library bookstore, and I picked this up for you. It has some chapters about Black Mass. You should read it all, however. I think you'll find the other sections particularly interesting.
See you soon.
Mary Jo.
Sweet lady, said Chris.
Yeah, she is.
Chris riffled through the pages of the book.
What's the scoop on Black Mass? Pretty hairy?
I don't know, answered Sharon. I haven't read it.
Did your guru tell you not to, kid?
Sharon stretched. Oh, that stuff turns me off.
Oh, really?
And so what happened to your Jesus complex?
Come on.
Chris slid the book across the table to Sharon. Here, read it and tell me what happens.
What, and get nightmares?
What do you think you'd get paid for, Sharon?
Throwing up. I can do that for myself, Chris muttered as she picked up the evening paper. All you have to do is stick your business manager's advice down your throat. You're vomiting blood for a week.
Chris abruptly put the paper aside. You turn on the radio, Sharon. Get the news.
Sharon had dinner at the house with Chris and then left for a date. She forgot the book.
Chris saw it on the table and thought about reading it, but in the end, she felt too weary. And so she left it on the table and walked upstairs. She looked in on Reagan, who was under the covers and apparently sleeping through the night. Chris then checked the window again. Locked shut. Leaving the room, Chris made sure to leave the door wide open. And before getting into bed that night, she did the same with her own. She watched part of a television movie, then slept. The next morning, the devil worship book had mysteriously vanished from the table. No one noticed.
Chapter 3. The consulting neurologist pinned up the x-rays again and searched for indentations that would look as if the skull had been pounded like copper with a tiny hammer. Dr. Klein stood behind him with folded arms. They had both looked for lesions and collections of fluid, for a possible shifting of the pineal gland. They were probing now for Leuchenschartel's skull, the telltale depressions that would indicate chronic intracranial pressure. They did not find it. The date was Thursday, April 28. The consulting neurologist removed his glasses and carefully tucked them into the left breast pocket of his jacket.
Well, there's just nothing there, Sam. Nothing I can see.
Klein frowned at the floor and shook his head.
Doesn't figure, he said.
You want to run another series?
No, I don't think so. I think I'll try an LP.
Yeah, good idea. In the meantime, I'd like you to see her.
Okay. How's today?
Well, I'm... Sound of a telephone buzzer.
Excuse me, Sam.
Klein picked up the telephone.
Yes?
Mrs. McNeil's on the phone. She says it's urgent.
Okay, what line? She's on 3.
Klein punched the extension button. Dr. Klein here.
Chris's voice was distraught and on the brim of hysteria.
Oh, Christ, Doc, it's Reagan. Can you come right away?
But what's wrong?
I don't know, Doc. I just can't describe it. Come over. Please come over right away. Come now.
Okay, I'm on the way.
He disconnected and buzzed his receptionist. Susan, tell Dresner to take my appointments.
Klein hung up the phone and started taking off his jacket.
That's her, Dick, he said. You want to come? It's only just across the bridge.
I've got an hour, I'd say.
Okay, let's go. They were there within minutes, and at the door where a frightened-looking Sharon greeted them, they heard moans and screams of terror from Reagan's bedroom. I'm Sharon Spencer, she told him. Come on in. She's upstairs. Sharon led them to the door of Reagan's bedroom, then cracked it open slightly and called in, Chris Doctors! Chris instantly came to the door, her face contorted in a vice of fear. Oh, my God, come in, she said in a quavering voice. Come on in and take a look at what she's doing. This is Doctor. In the middle of the introduction, Klein broke off as he caught sight of Reagan. Shrieking hysterically and flailing her arms, her body seemed to fling itself up horizontally into the air above her bed and then be slammed down savagely onto the mattress. It was happening rapidly, again and again.
Oh, Mother, make him stop!
Reagan was screeching.
Stop him! He's trying to kill me! Stop him! Stop him, Mother!
Oh, my baby, Chris whimpered as she jerked up a fist to her mouth and bit it. She turned a beseeching look to Klein. For God's sake, what's happening, Doc? What is it? Klein shook his head, his gaze fixed on Reagan as the phenomenon continued. She would lift about a foot each time and then fall with a wrenching of her breath, as if unseen hands had picked her up and thrown her down. Chris pressed both her hands to her mouth, staring wildly as the up-and-down movements abruptly ceased, and Reagan started twisting feverishly from side to side, with her eyes rolled upward into their sockets so that only the whites were exposed.
Oh, he's burning me! He's burning me! She was moaning as her legs began rapidly crossing and uncrossing.
The doctors moved closer, one on either side of the bed, and still twisting and jerking, Reagan arched her head back, disclosing a swollen, bulging throat, as she muttered incomprehensibly in a guttural tone,
No on my, no on my.
Klein reached down to check her pulse. Now let's see what the trouble is, dear, he said gently. And abruptly he was reeling across the room, staggering backward from the force of a vicious swing of Reagan's arm, as she suddenly sat up, her face contorted with a hideous rage.
The sow is mine,
she bellowed in a coarse and powerful voice.
She is mine! Keep away from her! She is mine!
A yelping laugh gushed up from her throat, and then she fell on her back as if someone had pushed her. She pulled up her nightgown, exposing her genitals.
Fuck me! Fuck me!
She screamed at the doctors, and with both her hands began masturbating frantically. Moments later, Chris ran from the room with a stifled sob, right after Reagan put her finger to her lips and licked them. Riveted, watching in shock, Klein approached the bedside again, this time warily, as Reagan appeared to hug herself, her arms folded, her hands caressing them.
Ah, yes, my pearl, she crooned in that strangely coarsened voice, and with both her eyes closed as if in ecstasy. My child, my flower, my pearl.
Then again she was twisting from side to side, moaning meaningless syllables over and over, until abruptly she sat up with her eyes staring wide in helpless terror. She mewed like a cat. Then she barked, then neighed like a horse, and then, bending at the waist, started whirling her torso around in rapid, strenuous circles. She gasped for breath.
Oh, stop him, she wept. Please stop him, it hurts. Make him stop, make him stop. I can't breathe.
Klein had seen enough. He fetched his medical bag to the window and quickly began to prepare an injection. The neurologist remained beside the bed and saw Reagan fall backward as if from a shove, while her eyes rolled upward into their sockets again. And with her body rolling from side to side, she began to mutter rapidly in guttural tones. The neurologist leaned closer and tried to make it out. Then he saw Klein beckoning, and he straightened up and went to him quickly. I'm giving her Librium, Klein told him guardedly, holding the syringe to the light of the window. But you're going to have to hold her. The neurologist nodded, yet he seemed preoccupied, inclining his head to the side, as if listening to the muttering from the bed.
"What's she saying?" Klein whispered. "I don't know. Just gibberish, nonsense syllables." Yet his own explanation seemed to leave him unsatisfied. "She says it as if it means something, though. It's got cadence." Klein nodded toward the bed, and the men approached quietly from either side. As they came, the tormented child went rigid, as if in the stiffening grip of tetany, and the doctors who had stopped at the bedside turned and looked at each other significantly. Then they looked again to Reagan as she started to arch her body upward into an impossible position, bending it backward like a bow until the brow of her head had touched her feet. She was screaming in pain. The doctors eyed one another with baffled and questioning surmise. And then Klein gave a signal to the neurologist. But before the consultant could seize her, Reagan fell limp in a faint and wet the bed. Klein leaned over and rolled up her eyelid. He checked her pulse. "Well, she'll be out for a while," he murmured. "I think she convulsed, don't you?" "Yes, yes, I think so." "Well, let's take some insurance." Klein deftly administered the injection. "Well, what do you think?" Klein asked as he pressed a circle of sterile tape against the puncture.
Temporal lobe? Sure, maybe schizophrenia is a possibility, Sam, but the onset's much too sudden. She hasn't any history of it, right?"
No, she hasn't."
"Neurasthenia?" Klein shook his head. "And hysteria, maybe?"
"Yeah, I've thought of that," said Klein.
"Well, of course. Though she'd have to be a freak to get her body twisted up like she did voluntarily now, wouldn't you say?"
The neurologist shook his head.
No, I think it's pathological, Sam. Her strength, the paranoia, the hallucinations. Schizophrenia, okay. Those symptoms it covers. But temporal lobe would also cover the convulsions. There's one thing that bothers me, though."
He trailed off with a puzzled frown.
"What's that?" "Well, I'm really not sure, but I thought I heard signs of dissociation. You know, my pearl, my child, my flower, the sow. I had the feeling she was talking about herself. Was that your impression, too, or am I reading something into it?"
As he mulled the question, Klein stroked his lower lip with a finger and then answered, "Well, frankly, at the time it never occurred to me, but now that you point it out..." He made a sound in his throat, looking thoughtful.
"Yeah, could be," he said.
"Yeah, I guess it could."
Then he shrugged off the notion. "Well, I'm going to do an LP right now while she's out, and then maybe we'll know something. Sound right?"
The neurologist nodded. Klein poked around in his medical bag, found a pill, and as he tucked it into a pocket, he asked the neurologist, "Can you stay?" The neurologist checked his watch.
"Yeah, sure.
Let's talk to the mother." They left the room and entered the hallway. Their heads lowered, Chris and Sharon were leaning against the balustrade by the staircase. As the doctors approached them, Chris wiped at her nose with a moist and balled-up handkerchief. Her eyes were red and small from crying. "She's sleeping," Klein told her, "and she's heavily sedated. She'll probably sleep right through until tomorrow." Gently nodding, Chris responded weakly, "That's good. Look, I'm sorry about being such a baby."
"You're doing just fine," Klein assured her.
"It's a frightening ordeal. Oh, by the way, this is Dr. Richard Coleman." Chris smiled at him bleakly. "Thanks for coming."
"Dr. Coleman's a neurologist."
"Oh, yeah? And so what do you think?" she asked as she shifted her glance from one of the men to the other.
"Well, we still think it's temporal lobe," Klein answered, and...
"Jesus, what in the hell are you talking about?" Chris suddenly erupted. "She's been acting like a psycho, like a split personality or something. I mean..."
"Then, oh," she uttered softly and in pain, as abruptly she pulled herself together
and lowered her forehead into a hand. "Guess I'm all uptight," she said quietly as she lifted a haggard look to Klein. "I'm so sorry," she said. "You were saying?" It was the neurologist who answered. "Mrs. McNeil," he said gently, "there haven't been more than 100 authenticated cases of split personality in all of medical history. It's a very rare condition. Now, I know the temptation is to leap to psychiatry, but any responsible psychiatrist would exhaust the somatic possibilities first. That's the safest procedure."
"Well, okay, then. So, what's next?"
"A lumbar tap," said Coleman.
"You mean a spinal?" Chris asked him with a look of distress.
He nodded. "What we missed in the x-rays and the EEG could turn up there. At the least, it would exhaust certain other possibilities. I'd like to do it now, right here, while she's sleeping. I'll give her a local, of course, but it's movement I'm trying to eliminate."
"Listen, how could she jump off the bed like that?" Chris asked,
her eyes squinting in incomprehension. "Well, I think we've discussed that before, Mrs. McNeil," said Klein. "Pathological states can induce abnormal strength and accelerated motor performance."
"But you said you don't know why."
"Well, it seems to have something to do with motivation," Coleman answered. "But it's about all we know."
"Well, now what about the spinal?" Klein asked Chris. "Can we go ahead with this?"
Abruptly sagging, Chris stared at the floor.
"Go ahead," she said softly. "Do whatever you have to. Just make her well."
"May I use your phone?" asked Klein.
"Yeah, sure. Come on. There's one in the study."
"Oh, incidentally," said Klein, as Chris turned around to lead them, "she needs to have her bedding changed." Quickly moving away, Sharon briskly said, "I'll do it right now."
"Can I make you some coffee?" asked Chris as the doctors followed her down the stairs.
"I gave the housekeeping couple the afternoon off, so it'll have to be instant." They declined.
"I see you haven't fixed that window yet," noted Klein.
"No, we called, though," Chris told him. They're coming out tomorrow with shutters you can lock." They entered the study where Klein called his office and instructed an assistant to deliver the necessary equipment and medication to the house. "And set up the lab for a spinal workup," he instructed. "I'll run it myself right after the tap."
When he'd finished the call, Klein asked Chris what had happened since last he saw Reagan.
"Well, let's see now. Last Tuesday," Chris pondered.
No, on Tuesday there was nothing at all. She went straight up to bed and slept right through until late the next morning and..."
"Oh, no, wait," she amended.
No, she didn't, that's right. Willie mentioned that she'd heard her in the kitchen awfully early. I remember feeling glad that she'd gotten her appetite back. But she went back to bed then, I guess, because she stayed there the rest of the day."
"She was sleeping?" Klein asked her.
No, I think she was reading." "Well, I started feeling a little better about it all. I mean, it looked as if the Librium was just what she needed. She seemed sort of, far away, and that bothered me a little. But still, it was a pretty big improvement."
"Then last night again?"
"Nothing," Chris continued. "Then this morning it started."
"Boy, did it start." "She'd been sitting in the kitchen," Chris recounted, "when Reagan ran screaming down the stairs to her, cowering defensively behind her chair as she clutched Chris's arm and told her in a high-pitched, frightened voice that Captain Howdy was chasing her. He had been pinching her, punching her, shoving her, mouthing obscenities, threatening to kill her.
There he is," she had shrieked at last while pointing to the kitchen door.
Then she'd fallen to the floor, her body jerking in spasms, as she gasped and wept and said that Howdy was kicking her. Then suddenly, Chris told the doctors, Reagan had stood in the middle of the kitchen with her arms extended and had begun to spin rapidly around like a top, continuing the movements for almost a minute until she had fallen to the floor in exhaustion.
And then all of a sudden, Chris finished distressfully, I saw there was this
hate in her eyes, this hate. And she told me, she called me a... Oh, Jesus.
Chris burst into convulsive sobbing. Klein moved to the bar, poured a glass of water from the tap, and walked back toward Chris. The sobbing had ceased.
Oh, shit, where's a cigarette? She sighed tremulously, wiping at her eyes with the knuckle of a finger.
Klein gave her the water and a small green pill. Try this instead, he advised. That a tranquilizer? Yes, I'll have a double. One's enough. Chris looked away and smiled wanly. Big spender. Chris swallowed the pill and then handed the empty glass to the doctor. Thanks, she said softly, and then rested her brow on quivering fingertips and gently shook her head.
Yeah, that's when it started, she picked up moodily. All of that other stuff was like she was someone else.
Like Captain Howdy, perhaps? Asked Coleman. Chris looked up at him in puzzlement. He was staring so intently. What do you mean? She asked. He shrugged.
I don't know. Just a question.
Chris turned absent eyes to the fireplace.
I don't know, she said dully. Just somebody. Somebody else.
There was a moment of silence. Then Coleman stood up. He had another appointment, he told them, and after some vaguely reassuring statement, he said goodbye. Klein walked him to the door.
You'll check the sugar? Coleman asked him.
No, I'm the Rosalind Village idiot, said Klein. Coleman smiled thinly.
I'm a little uptight about this myself, he said.
He looked away pensively, stroking his lips and his chin with thumb and fingers.
A strange case, he brooded quietly. Very strange.
He turned back to Klein.
Let me know what you find out.
You'll be home?
Yes, yes, I will. Give a call, okay?
Okay. Coleman waved and left. When the equipment arrived a short time later, Klein anesthetized Reagan's spinal area with Novocaine, and as Chris and Sharon watched, he extracted the spinal fluid while keeping a careful eye on the manometer.
Pressure's normal, he murmured.
When he'd finished, he went to the window's light to see if the fluid was clear or hazy.
It was clear.
Klein stowed the tubes of fluid in his bag.
I doubt that she will, he said, but in case she awakens in the middle of the night and creates a disturbance, you might want a nurse here to give her sedation.
Oh, can't I do it myself? Chris asked.
Well, why not a nurse?
Chris shrugged. She did not want to mention her distrust of doctors and nurses.
I'd just rather do it myself, she said simply. Well, injections are tricky, Klein cautioned. An air bubble can be very dangerous.
Oh, I know how to do it, Sharon interjected. My mother ran a nursing home up in Oregon.
Oh, would you do that, Cher? Chris asked her. Would you stay here tonight?
Well, beyond tonight, Klein put in. She may need intravenous feeding, depending on how she comes along.
Could you teach me how to do it, Doc? Chris asked him. She was staring at him anxiously.
I need to do it.
Klein nodded and said, sure.
Sure?
Guess I could.
He wrote a prescription for soluble Thorazine and disposable syringes and gave it to Chris. Have this filled right away, he told her. Chris handed it to Sharon. Cher, take care of that for me, would you? Just call it, they'll send it.
I'd like to go with the doctor while he makes those tests.
Chris turned and looked up at the doctor wistfully. Do you mind? Klein noted the tightness around her eyes, the look of helplessness, of confusion.
He said, sure. Sure, I know how you feel. Feel the same way when I talk to mechanics about my car.
Chris stared at him, wordlessly. They left the house at precisely 6:18 p.m. In his laboratory in the Rosalind Medical Building, Klein ran a number of tests. First, he analyzed protein content.
Normal. Then a count of blood cells. Too many red, Klein explained, means bleeding, and too many white would mean infection. He was looking in particular for a fungus infection that was often the cause of chronic, bizarre behavior. And again, drew a blank. At the last, Klein tested the fluid sugar content. Oh, how come that? Chris asked. Well, he told her, the spinal sugar should measure 2/3 of the amount of blood sugar, and anything significantly under that ratio would mean a disease in which the bacteria eat the sugar in the spinal fluid. And if so, it could account for your daughter's symptoms. But he failed to find it. Chris folded her arms and shook her head. Here we are again, folks, she murmured bleakly. For a while, Klein brooded. Then at last he turned and looked to Chris. Do you keep any drugs in your house? He asked her. Huh? Amphetamines, LSD? Chris shook her head and said, No. Look, I tell you, no, there's nothing like that. Klein nodded, looked down at his shoes, then somberly looked back up at Chris as he told her, I guess it's time we started looking for a psychiatrist. Chris was back in the house at exactly 7:21 p.m., and at the door she called out, Sharon? No answer. Sharon wasn't there. Chris went upstairs to Reagan's bedroom and found her still heavily asleep, without even a ruffle in her covers. There was an odor of urine in the room, Chris noticed. She looked from the bed to the window. Jesus, wide open! She thought Sharon must have opened it to air out the room. But where was she now? Where did she go? Chris walked over to the window, pulled it down shut and locked it, then went back downstairs just as Willie came through the front door. Oh, hiya, Willie. Any fun today? Shopping, Mrs. Movies. Where's Carl, Willie? Willie made a gesture of dismissal.
He lets me see Beatles movie this time, by myself. Good work, Willie. Yes, madam. Willie held up two fingers in a V for victory sign.
The time was 7:35 p.m. At 8:01, while Chris was in the study on the phone with her agent, she heard the front door coming open and closed again, high-heeled footsteps approaching, then saw Sharon entering the study with several packages in her arms, which she'd set on the floor. Sharon then flopped down into an overstuffed chair and waited while Chris continued talking. Where have you been? Asked Chris when she'd finished. Oh, didn't he tell you?
Oh, didn't who tell me?
Burke. Isn't he here?
He was here?
You mean he wasn't when you got home?
Listen, start all over, said Chris.
Oh, that nut, Sharon chided with a head shake. I couldn't get the druggist to deliver, so when Burke came around, I thought, fine, he can stay here with Reagan while I go get the Thorazine. Sharon shook her head again. Yeah, I should have known.
Yeah, you should have.
So what did you buy? Well, since I thought I had time, I went and I bought a rubber draw sheet for Reagan's bed. Did you eat, Sharon? No, I thought I'd fix a sandwich. Would you like one?
Yeah, good idea.
So what happened with the tests? Sharon asked as they walked to the kitchen. All negative, Chris answered her damply. I'm going to have to get a shrink. After sandwiches and coffee, Sharon showed Chris how to give an injection. The two main things, she explained, are to make sure that there aren't any air bubbles, and then you make sure you haven't hit a vein. See, you aspirate a little, huh, like this? She was demonstrating. And you see if there's blood in the syringe. For a time, Chris practiced the procedure on a grapefruit and seemed to grow proficient. Then, at 9:28, the front doorbell rang. Willie answered. It was Carl. As he passed through the kitchen en route to his room, he nodded a good evening and remarked that he'd forgotten to take his key. I can't believe it, Chris said to Sharon. That's the first time he's ever admitted a mistake.
They passed the evening watching television in the study. At 11:46, Sharon answered the phone, said, "Hold on," and then passed the receiver to Chris, saying, "It's Chuck, Chris," the young director of the second unit. He sounded grave. "Have you heard the news yet, Chris?" "News? No. What?" "Well, it's bad."
"Bad?"
"Burke's dead. He'd been drunk. He had stumbled. He had fallen down the steep flight of steps beside the house to the bottom, where a passing pedestrian on M Street watched as he tumbled into night without end. A broken neck. This bloody, crumpled scene. His last." As the telephone fell from Chris's fingers, she was silently weeping, and then stood up unsteadily. Sharon ran to her and caught her, steadied her, hung up the phone, and then led her to the sofa.
"Chris, what is it? What's wrong?"
Burke's dead."
"Oh, my God, Chris. No. What happened?"
But Chris shook her head. She couldn't speak. She wept. Then later they talked. For hours. Chris drank, reminisced about Dennings, now laughed, now cried.
"Oh, my God," she kept sighing. "Poor crazy old Burke. Poor Burke."
Her dream of death kept coming back to her. At a little past 5 in the morning, Chris was standing moodily behind the bar, her elbows propped, her head lowered, and her eyes very sad, as she waited for Sharon to return from the kitchen with a tray of ice. Then at last she heard her coming.
"I still can't believe it," said Sharon, as she entered the study.
Chris looked up, then to the side, and froze. Gliding spider-like rapidly, close behind Sharon, her body arched backward in a bow with her head almost touching her feet, was Reagan, her tongue flicking quickly in and out of her mouth while she sibilantly hissed and moved her head very slightly, back and forth like a cobra. Staring numbly, Chris said, "Sharon?" Sharon stopped. So did Reagan. Sharon turned and saw nothing, and then screamed and jumped away as she felt Reagan's tongue snaking out at her ankle. Chris threw a hand to her cheek, her face ashen. "Call that doctor and get him out of bed. Get him now." Whenever Sharon moved, Reagan would follow. Chapter 4. Friday, April 29th. While Chris waited in the hall outside the bedroom, Dr. Klein and a noted neuropsychiatrist were intently examining Reagan, observing her for almost half an hour, flinging, whirling, tearing at the hair and occasionally grimacing and pressing her hands against her ears as if blotting out a sudden and deafening noise. She bellowed obscenities, screamed in pain, then at last she flung herself face downward onto the bed and, tucking her legs up under her stomach, she began to moan softly and incoherently. The psychiatrist motioned Klein to come over to him. "Let's get her tranquilized," he whispered. "Maybe I can talk to her." The internist nodded and prepared an injection of 50 milligrams of Thorazine. However, when the doctors approached the bed, Reagan seemed to sense their presence and quickly turned over, and as the neuropsychiatrist attempted to hold her, she shrieked in malevolent fury, bit him, fought him, held him off. It was only when Carl was called in to assist that they managed to keep Reagan sufficiently still for Klein to be able to administer the injection. The dosage proved inadequate, and another 50 milligrams was injected. Then they waited. And soon Reagan grew tractable, then dreamy, then stared at the doctors in sudden bewilderment.
"Where's Mom? I want Mom. She was tearful and frightened. At a nod from the neuropsychiatrist, Klein left the room.
Your mother will be here in just a second, dear, the psychiatrist said to Reagan soothingly. He sat on the bed and stroked her head. There, there, it's all right, dear. I'm a doctor.
I want my mom.
Your mom is coming. She's coming. Oh, do you hurt, dear? As the tears streamed down her face, Reagan nodded. Tell me where, dear. Where does it hurt?
It hurts every place. Oh, my baby. Mom!
Chris ran to the bed and hugged her, kissed her, comforted and soothed. Then Chris herself became tearful, but with happiness.
Oh, you're back, Rags. You're back. It's really you. Oh, Mom, he hurt me, Reagan told her, sniffling. Please make him stop hurting me. Okay, Mom, please?
Chris stared at her, puzzled, then turned to the doctors with a plea and a question in her eyes as she asked them, What? What is it?
She's heavily sedated, the psychiatrist said gently.
You mean that?
He quickly cut her off with, We'll see.
The psychiatrist turned to Reagan.
Can you tell me what's wrong, dear?
I don't know,
Reagan tearfully answered him.
I don't know. I don't know why he does it. He was always my friend before.
Who's that?
Captain Howdy. And then, after it's like somebody else is inside me, making me do things.
Captain Howdy?
I don't know.
A person? Reagan nodded. Tell me who.
I don't know.
Well, all right, then. Let's try something, Reagan. How about if we play a little game?
He was reaching into a jacket pocket and drew out a shining round bauble attached to a silvery length of chain.
Have you ever seen movies where someone gets hypnotized? He asked. Wide-eyed, Reagan solemnly nodded. Well, I'm a hypnotist, Reagan.
Oh, yes, really. I hypnotize people all the time. I really do.
That's, of course, if they let me. Now, I think if I hypnotize you, Reagan, it will help you get well.
Yep.
That person inside you will come right out.
Would you like to be hypnotized? See, your mother's right here. She's right beside you.
Reagan looked at Chris questioningly.
Go ahead, honey. Do it, Chris urged her. Try it.
Reagan turned to the psychiatrist and nodded.
Okay, she said softly. But only a little.
The psychiatrist smiled, then quickly glanced to the sound of pottery breaking behind him. A delicate vase had fallen to the floor from the top of a bureau where Klein was now resting his forearm. He looked at his arm and then down at the shards with an air of puzzlement, then stooped to pick them up.
Never mind, Doc. Willie'll get it, Chris told him.
Would you please close those shutters for me, Sam? The psychiatrist asked. And pull the drapes?
When the room was dark, the psychiatrist gripped the chain in his fingertips and began to swing the bauble back and forth with an easy movement. He shone a penlight on it. It glowed. He began to intone the hypnotic ritual. Now watch this, Reagan. Keep watching, and soon you'll feel your eyelids growing heavier and heavier.
Within a very short time, Reagan seemed to be in a trance.
Extremely suggestible, the psychiatrist murmured. Then he asked, Are you comfortable, Reagan?
Yes,
Reagan answered, in a voice that was soft and whispery.
How old are you, Reagan?
12.
Is there someone inside you?
Sometimes.
When?
Different times.
It's a person?
Yes.
Who is it?
I don't know.
Captain Howdy?
I don't know.
A man?
I don't know.
But he's there.
Yes. Sometimes.
Now?
I don't know.
If I ask him to tell me, would you let him answer?
No!
Why not?
I'm afraid.
Afraid of what?
I don't know.
If he talks to me, Reagan, I think he will leave you. Do you want him to leave you?
Yes.
Let him speak, then. Would you let him speak? A long silence. And then finally,
yes.
I am speaking to the person inside of Reagan now, the psychiatrist said firmly. If you are there, you too are hypnotized and must answer all my questions. For a moment, he allowed the suggestion to enter Reagan's bloodstream. Then he repeated, if you are there, then you are hypnotized and must answer all my questions. Come forward and answer me now. Are you there? Silence. Then something curious happened. Reagan's breath turned suddenly foul. It was thick like a current. The psychiatrist smelled it from 2 feet away. He shone the penlight on Reagan's face, and wide-eyed and shocked, Chris lifted a hand to stifle a gasp as she watched Reagan's features contort into a malevolent mask, her lips pulling tautly in opposite directions and the tumefied tongue lolling wolfishly from her mouth. Are you the person in Reagan? Asked the psychiatrist. Reagan nodded. Who are you? Now on my, she answered gutturally. That's your name? Another nod. You're a man? She said. Say. Did you answer? Say. If that's yes, nod your head. Reagan nodded. Are you speaking in a foreign language? Say. Where do you come from? Dog. You say that you come from a dog? Dog morphosion, Reagan replied. The psychiatrist paused, and after thinking it over, he decided to attempt another approach. When I ask you questions now, Reagan, you will answer by moving your head. A nod for yes and a shake for no. Do you understand that? Reagan nodded. Did your answers have meaning? He asked her. Yes. Are you someone whom Reagan has known? No. That she knows of? No. Are you someone she's invented? No. You're real? Yes. Part of Reagan? No. Were you ever a part of Reagan? No. Do you like Reagan? No. Dislike her? Yes. Do you? Hate her? Yes. Over something she's done? Yes. Do you blame her for her parents' divorce? No. Has it something to do with her parents? No. With a friend? No. But you hate her? Yes. Are you punishing Reagan? Yes. You wish to harm her? Yes. To kill her? Yes. If she died, wouldn't you die too? No. The answer seemed to disquiet him, and he lowered his eyes in thought. The bedspring squeaked as he shifted his weight. In the smothering stillness, Reagan's breathing came raspy, as if from a rotted, putrid bellows. Here, yet far, and sinister.
as he lifted his glance again to that hideous, twisted face. The psychiatrist's eyes gleamed sharply with speculation as he asked, "Is there something she can do that would make you leave her?"
"Yes." "Can you tell me what it is?"
"Yes."
"Will you tell me?"
"No."
"But you..."
Abruptly, the psychiatrist gasped in pain as he realized with horrified incredulity that Reagan was squeezing his scrotum with the hand that had gripped him like an iron talon. Eyes wide and staring, he struggled to free himself, but he couldn't.
"Sam! Sam, help me!"
he croaked in agony. Bedlam. Chris leaping for the light switch. Dr. Klein running forward. Reagan with her head back, cackling demonically, then howling like a wolf. Chris slapped at the light switch. Then she turned and saw flickering, grainy black-and-white film of a slow-motion nightmare. Reagan and the doctors writhing on the bed in a tangle of shifting arms and legs, in a melee of grimaces, gasps, and curses, and the howling and the yelping and the hideous laughter. Reagan oinking and grunting like a pig, Reagan neighing like a horse, and then the film running faster with the bedstead shaking and violently quivering from side to side as Reagan's eyes rolled upward into their sockets as she wrenched up a keening shriek of terror, torn raw and bloody from the base of her spine. Reagan crumpled and fell unconscious. Something unspeakable left the room. For a haunted space of time, no one moved. Then slowly and carefully, the doctors untangled themselves. They stood up and stared at Reagan, speechless. And then Klein, expressionless, moved to the bed, took Reagan's pulse, and, satisfied, slowly and gently pulled her blanket up over her, and then nodded to Chris and the psychiatrist. They left the room and went down to the study, where, for a time, no one spoke. Chris was on the sofa with Klein, and the psychiatrist near her in the facing chairs that bracketed the space. The psychiatrist was pensive, pinching at his lip as he stared at the coffee table dully, then finally sighed and looked up at Chris as she turned her burned-out gaze to his. "What the hell is going on?" she asked, in a haggard, vanquished whisper. "Did you recognize the language he was speaking?" Chris shook her head. "Have you any religious beliefs?"
"No, I don't."
"And your daughter?"
"No."
From there, the psychiatrist asked a lengthy series of questions relating to Reagan's psychological history. And when at last he had finished, he seemed disturbed. What is it?" Chris asked him, her white-knuckled fingers clenching and unclenching on the balled-up handkerchief in her fist. "Doc, what has she got?" The psychiatrist looked evasive.
"Well, it's somewhat confusing," he said. "And quite frankly, it would be quite irresponsible for me to attempt a diagnosis after so brief an examination."
"Well, you must have some idea," Chris insisted. Fingering his brow and looking down, the psychiatrist emitted a sigh, and then, relenting, looked up and said,
"All right, I know you're quite anxious, so I'll mention a couple of impressions. But they're tentative, okay?" Chris leaned forward, nodding tensely.
Yeah, okay. So what are they?"
Fingers in her lap started fumbling with the handkerchief, telling the stitches in the hem like linen rosary beads. "To begin with," the psychiatrist told her, "it's highly improbable that she's faking. Right, Sam?" Klein was nodding in agreement.
"We think so for a number of reasons," the psychiatrist continued. "For example, the abnormal and painful contractions, and most dramatically, I'd suppose, from the change in her features when we were talking to the so-called person she thinks is inside her. A psychic effect like that is unlikely, unless she believed in this person. Do you follow, ma'am?
Yeah? Yeah, I guess. Except one thing I don't understand is where this other person comes from. I mean, you keep hearing about split personality, but I've never really known any explanation.
Well, neither does anyone else. We use concepts like consciousness and mind and personality, but we don't really know yet what they are. And so when I start talking about something like multiple or split personality, all we have are some theories that raise more questions than they give answers. Freud thought that certain ideas and feelings are somehow repressed by the conscious mind, and they remain alive in a person's subconscious, you see. They remain quite strong, in fact, and they continue to seek expression through various psychiatric symptoms. Now, when this repressed, let's call it dissociated material, the word dissociation here implying a splitting off from the mainstream of consciousness. Are you with me?
Yeah, go on.
All right. Well, when this type of material is sufficiently strong, or when the subject's personality is disorganized and weak, the result can be schizophrenic psychosis. Now, that isn't the same, he cautioned, as dual personality. Schizophrenia means a shattering of the personality. But where the dissociated material is strong enough to somehow come glued together, to somehow organize in the individual's subconscious, why then it's been known at times to function independently as a separate personality. In other words, to take over the bodily functions.
And that's what you think is happening to Reagan?
Well, that's just one theory. There are several others, some of them involving the notion of escape into unawareness, escape from some conflict or emotional problem. Your daughter hasn't any history of schizophrenia, and the EEG didn't show the brainwave pattern that normally accompanies it. So that leaves us with the general field of hysteria.
I gave last week, Chris murmured. The worried psychiatrist smiled thinly.
Hysteria, he continued, is a form of neurosis in which emotional disturbances are converted into bodily disorders. Now, in certain of its forms, there is dissociation. In psychasthenia, for example, the individual loses consciousness of his actions, but he sees himself act and attributes his actions to someone else. His idea of the second personality is quite vague, however, and Reagan seems quite specific. So we come to what Freud used to call the conversion form of hysteria, which grows from unconscious feelings of guilt, the need to be punished. Dissociation is the paramount feature here, even multiple personality. And the syndrome might also include epileptoid-like convulsions, hallucinations, and abnormal motor excitement. Chris had listened intently, her eyes and face scrunched up with the strain of trying to understand.
Well, that does sound a lot like Reagan, she said. Don't you think? I mean, except for the guilt part. I mean, what would she have to feel guilty about?
Well, a cliché answer might be the divorce. Children often feel they are the ones rejected, and sometimes